हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो भक्ति भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय वन आदिकाण्ड फोर भक्ति इज सुपीरियर टू ऑल अदर साधनस अनुच्छेद 95। ओके देन In the second paragraph, these acts should be understood to be performed for satisfying Krishna, for it is said. This was what he mentioned before. Devotional service unto Krishna is to be attained by charity, strict vows, austerities, fire, sacrifices, japa, study of Vedic texts, controlling the senses, and by the performance of many other auspicious practices. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-24. Then the Acharya goes on to say, these acts should be understood to be performed for satisfying Krishna, for it is said, quote, the great sage Narada said, when a living entity is born to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's the Supreme Controller, his birth, all his fruit of activities, his lifespan, his mind, and his words are all factually perfect, right? So when you take up devotional service or engage in devotional service, then all these things, birth, fruit of activities, lifespan, his mind and words are all factually perfect. I think we went through this yesterday.
Maharaj, we just next page, Varnashrama, that Srimad Bhagavatam 1:28.
Ah, okay.
We started so
we'll
the
next one. Okay. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Okay, so then the positive, those who perform pious activities for thousands of lives should develop bhakti of the Lord of all controllers to Nardan. Means, in other words, you're doing your pious activities, you should develop. Means that's the point, not that it will develop, because it says next, direct bhakti to Madhava arises by various sacrifices undertaken for thousands of years, regulated for fasting and vows. Then it says, in the opposite way, varnashrama of the human being, which does not produce attraction for topics of the Lord, is only a wasted effort. Means you're performing it. Why? If it's only for karma or jnana, you'll only get those. But if you're performing them for bhakti, then you'll get bhakti. So in other words, one must always be conscious that you have to do whatever you're doing. There's nothing that's left out in connection with and for the satisfaction of Krishna. Because everything being Krishna's energy and everything being controlled by Krishna as Paramatma, according to his laws, everything therefore can be connected to the Lord. Okay. Then, okay, Udriti, Srila Prabhupada, the need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. Means this, these few, okay. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and spirit. The complete freedom is achieved when he meets the supreme, complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. Right? So this section that he's writing, because this is Bhagavatam 1:28, and we see in that second chapter, they're establishing all these principles of Bhagavatam and everything, and how it'll function, how it'll work. And you see here is that taking from this, if you went into, a group of persons who were a bit more intellectual and were into some variety of new agey or, personal development or yoga or anything, and you spoke this, they would be so impressed. It's saying exactly what they want to hear. We want freedom, that complete freedom, getting beyond the greater universe, going beyond, expanding, like that, to see the free light and the spirit. I mean, it's just like, this is like nectar to them. And at the same, so this is what is, this is the preaching that you want to catch those people who have these mentalities. Not this modern so-called, soft preaching. That's just not preaching. you know, or hardly preaching. It means there's association of devotees in that, taking prasad, that's nice. Sometimes chanting of Hare Krishna, so those are good. You know, so there's our positives there. But it's not, this catches their intellect, this catches their mood, their spirit. Then they want to commit themselves to this. And this is just talking about the Sambandha aspect or the Brahman aspect of the, you know, working with Krishna, and then it brings it to the Supreme Spirit and establishes. So this is like, if you want to know how to deal with those guys that have a brain and are looking for something, this is what you use. If they're looking for something else, then they may not catch it. Then he says that's what they want. They want that. They want this position of being established in Brahman, the soul being freed from the fetters of the material world and being established on the eternal platform of Brahman, right? Then he goes on to say, there is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. So everyone's looking for God. And they're all looking how this can be appreciated and, you know, by them, but they make the mistake because it's not in connection with the person of Godhead or even with him as just the controller of the universe. They mistake that that attraction that they have to anything and everything is coming from the material, gross and subtle material object itself. So if the point is the body is attractive, you know, because of the potency of Krishna. He has established what is beauty and what's not, what's attractive and what's not, and what's attractive for what mentality, right? Because 8,400,000 species, they're attracted to each other, you know? And so that's Krishna, but they don't know it's Krishna. They think it's that living entity, right? And then the qualities of the mind, the particular qualities that are there that someone has, a friendliness or a pleasantness or a chivalrousness or a goodness or whatever it is, those are also Krishna. Krishna's all the superior qualities. So he's showing how all this can be, how all this is him. But if we don't see it as him, then we get distracted, and it's a material energy. So therefore, in ignorance, we're thinking that this is material energy. And so that's illusion. So interesting is that this kind of concept or understanding was there with those early devotees in Krishna consciousness, because you see in George Harrison's little preface, or whatever he wrote to the Krishna book, right? Because he published it. He gave the money for it. I think it's £19,000 at that time, you know, which is a lot of money at that time. And he published, you know, and Prabhupada made those very big coffee table size books, small coffee table, but still coffee table size. Now you get them in just, you know, the small, like, but these were like big in three volumes, I think. And there he mentions everyone's looking for Krishna, just that they don't know how to find him. So he's already catching this principle. So Prabhupada is talking to Sambandha Abhideya and Prayoja, and devotees were catching it, this analytical thing, and they were applying it. Love of you, we are the spirit soul, not the body. We're eternal servants of Krishna. The goal is to develop love for Krishna. That process is through the chanting of the holy name. And in this, so that's the one in knowledge. Not in knowledge, then he's still looking for that love for Krishna and that action, but he's mistaking it in the material energy, right? So the only thing that switches it from material to spiritual is bhakti. That's it. Nothing in karma, nothing in jnana can switch it, because the material, by, you know, Krishna's will, he allows that on the platform of jnana, you can understand the absolute truth up to the point of the position of eternity and knowledge, that it's all knowledge, all and eternal. You know, you can't get beyond that with material knowledge. You might get some aspect of the localized, but generally you're starting to break through, but whether you actually see that it has broken through or not, that's another thing, as we see so many yogis get distracted. So all that, so up to the point of liberation, being freed from the, you know, the specific material universe and being in the, you know, position of Brahman realization in Mahakala Pura under, you know, Lord Shiva's observance, you know, until such time as you want to do something, as long as you're I'm Brahman, then you stay there. But as soon as you go, well, what about that? You know, wow, you know, that really missing out on that, you know, how you say that, pastrami on rye sandwich, you know. So then, bang, Shiva, Lord Shiva, immediately puts it back in the image. So that's the material consciousness. We're thinking that's spiritual. You can say it's on a spiritual platform, and not by association, but it's not actually transcendental to the Mahatattva. You're transcendental to the specific universe you were in, but you're not transcendental to material consciousness. And so therefore, that's the range, and that's what's not understood, is that it's that wide. And so until you add in bhakti, which brings you to the transcendental platform as opposed to just the spiritual, because that includes then the Bhagawan aspect. Because you may appreciate, oh, he controls everything and this and that, but ultimately he's impersonal. But when you get to the point of, you know, he's a person, you're a person, you relate based on affection, you perform activities based on affection, and naturally you use your position, you know, or the field, which that would be the spiritual aspect. Is that it's you know, we call it the spiritual world because it's based in spirit. Right? But you're going to perform devotional activities in that spiritual environment to please the Lord. That's transcendental, actually. That's what Madhvacharya says, is that until you establish yourself in a personal relationship with the Lord in a spiritual planet, you're not actually liberated. So actually, only transcendental is actually liberated. Everything else is just a ruse to, you know, keep the living entity inspired. He's gotten tired of karma. Let's go for gyan. When he gets tired of gyan, then he can go back to just being a sinful wretch. And when that gets too much, okay, then you can take up karma and be pious and get something good. Okay, I got everything. Nothing satisfying, you know, like that. Oh, you can go for gyan. And just like that, that's the cycle of samsara. And they just go around and around, thousands and thousands of lifetimes in each place. You know, probably even millions, you know, because it says that yogis drilling their breath for millions of lifetimes cannot get to the point of seeing the lotus feet of the Lord. So at some point, they give up and go to something else. They go back to gross, you know, being an animal or something. You know. Okay. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. I mean, all the right words. You know, the need of the spirit soul, right? Get out of the limited sphere of material bondage, right? Fulfill his desire for complete freedom. Get out of the covered walls of the great universe. He wants to see the free life and spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of God. There's dormant affection. We're going spiritual existence is manifest like that. Perverted affection, occupational engagement will evoke our divine consciousness. I mean, it's just like, this is like perfect, you know. Yeah, what is it? I mean, chefs, you know, it's so perfect. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord, because you've already introduced them before as the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. Then dormant affection for God, then you can only, and then occupational engagement, divine consciousness, then we can, by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord, then any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is herein to be simply a waste of time. So in other words, you have to be conscious that you're doing this for Krishna. Then it becomes devotional service. If you're being engaged by devotees in an activity you don't know, you just think it's some, you know, karma or some religious or spiritual. It's a jata sukriti. It will bring you gradually forward until it gets to a certain volume. Then it goes, hey, like this. But otherwise, just doing these things without the association of devotees, it's just mundane. It might be better mundane, like Prabhupada said, gold ball and chain mundane rather than silver ball and chain mundane or iron ball and chain mundane. Iron ball and chain mundane, yes. Yeah, okay. This is because other occupational duties, whatever ism they belong to, right? Because we have isms coming out our ears, right? Cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of the salvationists are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties, right? The fountainhead of all liberty. I mean, it's just the wording, right? This was written before Prabhupada came to America. Right, so he's already considering how he's going to get the so-called, you know, intellectual, sophisticated, you know, person who, you know, worries about how he's going to get them to appreciate this. So he's already taken this position. All we have to do is take this, and then that's where you start. That's where Prabhupada started. You know, you have the classic things that we even printed, you know, on chanting. It's a lecture Prabhupada gave, and I think he's quoting from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on that one, you know, from the Brahma Samhita. He just takes a section out of there and reads it. And so these elements then are, this is the basis of how you talk to people and get them to understand this whole, because we don't understand here the philosophy. Then, you know, in this case, then we take the, you know, variety of modern, you know, religions and, you know, yoga, new age and political correctness, and then try to speak according to that kind of speak, you know, or typically correct. I mean, if you want to actually be correct on that kind of speak, it's actually called new speak. That's the actual technical term. So then that kind of new speak, it's always changing and this and that, and one gets, you know, caught up in it. So it's not the flowery words of the Vedas, it's the flowery words of new. Changing, one's getting caught up in that. And one thinks that if you're good at it, you're attractive in it, then you think you're getting people. But the problem is even if you can introduce some Krishna consciousness while using that, unless you stop that and bring straight Krishna consciousness, they will maintain the attachment to that field that you attracted them by. And if they don't continue to get that nourishment in Krishna consciousness, then they will start to go back to re-adding those things in. If they got some taste for Krishna consciousness, they'll keep it. They may keep chant, they may listen to kirtan, but their main religious process will be these others. So it's a very interesting where there's no philosophy on means on how to establish Krishna consciousness. Then we use these modern religious systems. Or if you're, you know, more of a, if you were, let's say, more of a, you know, conservative religionist before joining, you might throw in a few of those kind of elements, right? That. And then when it comes to where you get to past that, where you don't need the logic, it's just Krishna consciousness, then how much you can accept of that, you accept that, but then not the religion of Vaishnavism. So you're left with that new agey kind of stuff. And now you have this philosophy. So this philosophy, the actual philosophy, has no religion, and this new age religion kind of thing has no philosophy. Like that. And then anything beyond that, we might go into it as sahajya, and then we'll use that religious process, you know, or the impersonal kind of thing, the academics. We've added in the academic, you know, that position is very good and established and socially acceptable. And, you know, the senior preachers and philosophers, when they don't actually understand either the religion or the philosophy. So you end up with their religious sentiment, not ours, and then applying it to philosophy that makes sense for their religion. So instead of it being the philosophy there based on the sub-dharma of devotional service, then you're basing it on some sentiment that you may have that, oh, it's okay for that. If you were more, New Agey, then you're a little bit more open to it. If you weren't, then you're not. You have to go with more kind of, Abrahamic kind of things, elements and all that. And so it becomes a real mishmash. It's a kitschery, And so it's not strong in either philosophy or religion. You switch to whichever one works for your position. If someone attacks this, then you go to political correctness. And if like that, then you go over to New Age. And if like that, but look at all these other religions. What about, what are the Christians doing? What are they, it's like that. Generally, they don't mention Muslims or Jews. They generally stick to Christians, because even if they are Jewish, they don't want to mention that. So you want to keep it to Christians. So no one goes like that, because you have to remember the Inquisition and stuff like that, So these kind of things like that. So it's not balanced. Well, here you see what Prabhupada is giving is perfectly showing how you scientifically take them through using the language and all that. So it's like, you can't use this, these language, but they're not even using, they don't even know it exists. This is the language. You say it today, people will pay attention. If they got a brain, they don't have a brain, then you use whatever works there. Then keep it a little more simple. But here, Prabhupada's used these nice words. And even if not, they're simple. Right? And if someone's demoniac, okay, then they're not going to like it. At least they'll take some prasad. They've heard Hare Krishna. They get some agyata secreta. They'll move forward at some point. Right? And we see that there have been telling me that his friend, he had no interest in Krishna consciousness, and one of his good friends had bumped into the devotees and gone to the Sunday program, and so he wanted to go again, and he said, they were together, I guess, on Sunday, hey, let's go to this program. It's kind of like, what for? He says, this and that, I'm not into it. Says, so he got great food. Okay, so go for the food. So he goes there, and at least in those days, devotees during prasad would sit down. You sit down with little groups of people, everyone would sit down, and you'd talk to whoever's there. And then talking to whoever was there, you discuss philosophy and this and that. And so this person who didn't want to go, but his friend did, he's eating the food, he likes the food. And that, but he argues like anything. He's total atheist, completely, not whatever you say, like that. So, because the friend was, into it and the food was good, they went for 9 weeks in a row, or whatever it is, 9 weeks, over 9 weeks. I got the idea it was in a row, but whatever. And so after 9 weeks, this person who was totally, atheist and folk, he became convinced by the prasad, by the kirtan, hearing the philosophy they always argue with. But like that, but it made him think. And then he joined after 9 weeks. So that's the point. Even if it's there, they're still hearing the real philosophy. No one was going into a this and that, like that. They'd use some New Age words and all that, like Prabhupada's using here, these more intellectual and more, general, more accessible words to a broader range rather than a bunch of hippies. Then it works. So this idea is, you can't say anything. There it was straight philosophy. He's straight, are countering with atheism for nine. Then gradually, okay, something catches, and then 9 weeks he joined. And he was probably one of the more extreme cases. Other people joined quicker. Some took longer. So it's just a matter of their sukriti. So that's the thing, is you can't blame it on, you're not a devotee because, they didn't behave right, or they dressed funny, or they talked funny, or they talked about Varnashram and I got put off because, I believe in equity, fraternity, liberty, so this Varnashram stuff. No, you didn't join because you were not qualified. You didn't have the Agyata Sukriti. You were too sinful. That's why. That's why, nothing else, because you have to make the choice. It's not the others. That may have been your excuse not to join. Like someone mentioned, they came, they got interested, they came to a place where the devotees were like this, you know, took prasad. It was great. Somebody was talking. It was really nice, but someone else mentioned something and he freaked out. And so for a year and a half, he wouldn't contact the devotees. That is his choice, because he could have, after hearing it, discussed with them, what does it mean? Why are you saying this? You know, as far as I understand, this is wrong, you know, because of these modern things. But he didn't. He just, you know, that's it. I'm not doing it. And after a year and a half, I guess the, you know, Agyata Sukriti that was there from that started poking his little head up again. And so then he contacted, and then someone explained, and then he got, and then he joined. So this whole thing is, oh, we have to change what we're doing because I didn't join because of that. We have to base it on your lack of power. That's why? You know? No, it was not your choice. We can be more, people can be aware to that will be attractive, but you can't, if you didn't join, you can't blame it on the devotees. You know, if they weren't preaching, they weren't that, okay, then you can say they're just hiding out and no one's there, so you didn't know they were there. Okay, that's a problem. But at the same time, is you could have taken the wrong turn and walked down the street and bumped into somebody. You could have. That's what Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says. Paramatma is sitting in the heart. When you want to know why, then he puts you in contact with the devotee. He'll arrange it, right? There's no other, it means that you bumped into the devotees. It's not because you're so fabulous and you are, you know, and you made the plan. No, it's just, that's the way it works. Krishna arranged it. So we have to understand there's a divine element there, because you desire, that's why Krishna arranged it. So that's the point. When you desire that your karma and jnana and yoga are connected to Krishna, or something about Krishna to advance, then they will be. And the more you advance, the more you know about Krishna, then the more efficient this all is. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay. This is because other occupational duties, whatever ism they belong to. So the occupational duty of devotional service is the foremost. That's the sadharma. Now within that, that can be expressed through the dharmas, you know, the occupational duties according to your conditioning. But the main dharma of the soul serving Krishna in devotion, that has to be, without that, no other ism will help, right? They can't give liberation. Even the activities of the salvationist considered to be useless because either find no permanent abode for his hankering soul. The hankering soul must be satisfied by the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service. Right? So that scientific process means you know the theory, you know. That is the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service. Right? Okay. So then the last quote then he gives, the great endeavor one undergoes in executing varnashram duties, in performing austerities, and in hearing from the Vedas culminates only in fame and wealth. But by respecting and attentively hearing the recitation of the Lord's qualities, one can remember his lotus feet. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:12-54. Now he ends this with, Uddhava spoke thus to the gopis. So in other words, this is what he discussed with the gopis. So we're thinking, oh, all this stuff, and you know, the varnashram and all this, oh, I kick that out. Okay, then you kick out the, you know, what the gopis, what the brajavasis are doing, you know, what the actual Gaudiya Vaishnavas are doing. I mean, if you want to take in the, you know, upa sampradayas of the caste Goswamis, the Sahajiyas, you know, the Scotland, I mean, that you can do. But here it said, Uddhava spoke thus to the gopis. It means this is the platform of philosophy that whatever you're doing, your gopis, you're doing gopis optional things, but because you're doing it, remember, and only absorbed in Krishna, then that is the position of devotional service. That's what Uddhava was discussing with the gopis. Krishna sent them for that. Because it would put them, it's going to be in separation, and that's going to give the bhavas and the rasas, going to give the highest point. But the point is the platform they were functioning from, the spiritual platform and the devotional platform, you know, of this, you know, the sat and chit aspects were this. And then Ananda, it's about Krishna. And they're absorbed in the rasa with Krishna in separation. And Krishna himself was also doing, he's God, he could be there with the gopis. But to taste that element of that separation, then he's gone to Mathura and there in Vrindavan. And that way then it intensifies. Right? Because then, you know, very shortly he'll come back to Vrindavan and he'll stay. Right after the pastime with Dantavakra, he stays. Like that. Viti. After, so we should understand that this is not, oh, this is some basic thing, oh, this is archaic. This is what's being discussed with the gopis. It's eternal. So anybody who says it's time-bound, then is foolish. Their mentality is limited only to time and space. Because if they say, oh, the Vedas, that means their mentality, their occupation is limited to time and space. They're not functioning on the spiritual platform. You can say that with impunity, that in this point, that's there. Maybe other points, they're situated nicely in Krishna consciousness. That's why they're in Krishna consciousness. But as far as their understanding of how Varnashram is used to express, and this is Jiva Goswami, you don't get any higher treatise than this. And this is taken from, he's quoting Srimad Bhagavatam. So one can't say, and we see the purports, what Prabhupada's talking here. And this is first canto, second chapter. Right? So we'll take it, oh, Varnashram doesn't produce, it's only a waste of effort, so throw it out. But they'll keep all these other bogus, you know, sentimental, inauspicious activities and call them, oh, this will, we're just being practical, yukta vairagya. What do you mean? When you say Varnashram, unless it's engaged, is useless, that means every other ism and that they can even think of is already included and thrown out. That's like saying, you know, yeah, when we say all your money, you know, oh no, but I got some change in my pocket. He didn't say change. So change is all right. Riti, after establishing that the supreme outcome of one's actions is devotion, bhakti, and recognizing that without attaining bhakti, the pursuits of karma are futile, the next anucheda elucidates that the ultimate object of the process of knowledge, jnana, is to achieve a state of unadulterated devotion to the Lord, right? So the karma is supposed to give unadulterated devotion, same with the jnana, right? So that's why we see as the devotees are situated, you know, who understand the philosophy and process are situated on the platform of Vijnanamaya, right? The topmost of the platforms on the platform of moksha, because they're doing devotional service. So technically they're liberated, right? They can come to that point of always acting on that platform and then come to Anandamaya. So they're always then practicing Anandamaya. That's the sadhana, but they may fall back to Vijnanamaya, but they don't go lower. So that's why in that platform, it's based, it's religion, then Vijnanamaya, and the lower two are not so important. You know, how much they fit in the devotional service they're used. So here then is then taking that platform, Anucheta 96. When jnana is described, it should be understood to be included in bhakti. For instance, it is said, this is Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.5. Let's see, what is it? Pureha bhuman bahavo pi yoginas tvad arpiteha nija karma labdhyaha labdaya vibhudya bhaktyaiva kato panitaya prapediren no chuta te gatim param. Interesting. Two apostrophes, one after the other. Never seen that. O Lord, possessing unlimited glory, O Lord, who does not fail his devotee, many yogis in the past, offering their activities to you and developing realization through devotional activities, easily attained your association. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.5. Is that the pump? You did. Okay, Udriti, Śrīla Viśvanatha Chakravarti Thakura. In the previous two verses, bhakti is established as the means of attaining the Lord by negation and positive statement. Right? So he's talking about before, as they gave negation that with, you know, if it doesn't attain, then it's useless, but it does, by doing that, you can attain if you're doing it in a devotional mood. In the present verse, the activities of bhakti are established. O Lord, quote, O Lord, Human. In this universe, Iha, there are many who practice bhakti, yoginaha, and they offer their activities to you, using all their senses to increase their devotion. Being fully engrossed in bhakti with faith and disregarding varnashram, they engage in hearing and chanting nija karma labhya, only about you. By the prema bhakti, which arises from hearing and chanting kato panitaya, they realize vibhudya, the Lord's form, qualities, and activities, and attain eternal association of the Lord in prema, param. The verse can also be, end quote, the verse can also be taken as a rejection of the yoga process, having rejected jnana in the previous verses. Quote, no? Okay, maybe close the window. Quote, then after practicing yoga for a long time and understanding its futility, O Lord, the yogis understand you through devotion mixed with jnana attained through offering you his activities and attain you. Right? So then you see it's mixed with jnana. So then the yogis basically could, you know, by that yoga process itself, if it's only through those elements, then establish themselves in Shantarasa. That's basically where you get, because the great sages then, by knowledge, they know he's there, though they may not have an attraction, but they understand his position and appreciate that. Then there's those who with devotion function on that platform of knowledge and appreciation, and it takes on the Shantarasa. So that's why you see in the 11th, 12th cantos, when they're talking about these yogis and the rishis, then you see is their platform is the same. Just one is seeing it in bhakti and one's not. But the position of understanding that the Lord is like this, but it's, you know, Paramatma feature. They understand his. That's why you see the great sages can give all these nice prayers that are about, but you see they're not talking about necessarily beyond his Bhagavan feature as like that. They may know is there, but it's just for them knowledge. So it's just a lower form of shanta in which there's an appreciation, but it's still fairly neutral. Still, it's still within bhava. It hasn't attained to the really, you know, a higher status. Okay. Then, okay. So here, then he going on, and disregarding ashram. And in other words, like we said before, jnana then means is that the economic benefits or the social benefits, those are given up. But you see is that they're still practicing the elements of ashram, you know, the detachment and those things that are good for that. So they'll still be following that aspect, but they've basically given up the varnashram, because here's what we'll take. See, they give up all varnashram, but if you see, they're following the principles of varnashram, because general etiquette and interaction is all in ashram, right? Manu teaches that in the brahmachari, that how you deal and interact with everybody. That's ashram. And so then that they're doing, they're just not doing anything where they're taking the position of a Brahmin, and therefore then engaging in activities that then give them, particular social economic benefit. Right? Is that okay? So how we can distinguish here is that it's not negating what was said before. It's just that that was including the occupational activities of Varna. You know, while now it's that Varna aspect is given up and just the ashram aspects. And so now they're just using them. That's why devotees living in the temple and didn't really have any occupation outside could advance, because they were just following Varna, ashram. So technically, those who were living full-time in the temple, doing full-time service, whether they were brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanvas, they were living as sannyasis. Though some had more, let's say, experience and scriptural knowledge and all that, and preaching experience and that ability, they took the role, external role of the sannyasi. But otherwise, they were all acting on that platform in mentality of sannyas. So the glory that was there was very special in pronunciation of Srila Prabhupada, right? Oh, great Lord. Okay, so then he must be giving now. A translation of that. Yeah, now this is his translation of that Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.5. Oh great Lord, previously in this world, many yogis, not attaining knowledge by yoga process, later offered their actions, iha, even material actions to you. Then by bhakti, which provided attainment of you by your topics, kato, pani, taya, which was attained by offering their actions, easily performed, they realized Atma and then Bhagavan, vibhutya, and attained the supreme spiritual goal, right? So they realized Atma, their position, and the position of the Lord, and then Bhagavan. So then he's bringing forth, they come to that point of Bhagavan, though, as mentioned before, though they might be mixed with the element of Shanta Ras. Maybe just turn off that fan. It's the one right next to the, yeah. In Bhagavad Gita, also pure bhakti is taught. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, matas sarvam pravartate, iti matva bhajante mam, buddha bhava samanvitaha. Bhagavad Gita 10.8. I am the source of everything. Due to me, everything operates. Convinced by this knowledge, the intelligent person endowed with love worship me. Right? So very far out in one verse, you're basically getting the whole aspect of the chakra shloki. Even though this is the last of the, I think the, is it? No, this is the first of that. You know, so it's under that. He's the source of everything, right? That's the first verse. Due to me, everything operates. That's the second verse. Convinced of this knowledge, the intelligent person endowed with love worship me. So then combining that, it's about him, the person, and they're doing that worship. But in a, you know, like that, then he, you know, then tesham evanukam partam aham agyana jamtama nashayam yatma bhavasto jnana dipena bhasvata. To show favor to them, I, by myself, situated within them, extinguish the darkness born of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Bhagavad Gita 10.11. Right? Brahma spoke thus to the Lord. Right? So then Brahma is discussing these things. So this is the conversation on points by Brahma to the Lord. So then we see is that Krishna, when you take up this aspect, right, then when you try to know Krishna, you are trying to appreciate in that and serve Krishna. Whatever you're doing, you're engaging Krishna. Then Krishna, through the shining lamp of knowledge, he says to show favor to them, I, by myself, like that. So to show means the person who's saying it is there, but then I, he takes that by myself. So he puts himself in all the various angles that he could talk about, you know, I am my, what is the I, me, my, me, like that. Situated within them, and situated within them, how he'll do it, he's situated there with you. He's in the heart, you're in the heart, extinguish the darkness born of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. So then through that, then he himself is getting that done. So that's the thing. You try to surrender. That's what was mentioned before. You make this endeavor, he'll reciprocate. Krishna says in the Chatur Shloki, you do these things always like that. Then in Gita, he's saying to that devotee doing that, then I will then give, because knowledge, that clarity is prasada. It's the mercy of the Lord. It's not coming because I studied it. It's coming because Krishna, being pleased with your endeavor to study, then reveals the knowledge, right? Even on, you know, it's, that's the way it works. Even material knowledge, because you put in the effort that is due to, you know, worthy of that knowledge according to your ability, and Krishna then reciprocates with some clarity. You don't put, you just flippantly go through, then you not, you may pass your exam, but you don't have the knowledge, you know? So that's the point here, is that Krishna, everything's coming from him. So someone who's convinced of all this, then it means I'm the source of everything. Due to me, everything operates. When you're convinced of this, right, of that Brahman and Paramatma, you're convinced that everything's Krishna and it operates because of Krishna, not because of me, not because of the modern political system or the modern economic system, or whatever it is that you may be attached to. No, it operates because of Krishna. Convinced by this knowledge, the intelligent person endowed with love, right? He's intelligent, but then endowed with love, he worships me. Otherwise, he's convinced he's an intelligent person, like the yogi. But then it comes to the point of that affection, right? So that's the point. And then Krishna himself will reciprocate that personally. You're making that, he reciprocates. That's the perfection. It's because the Bhagavan means it's between you and him. It's that it's the reciprocation. Right? How are we doing on time? Okay. For Riti, next the author asserts that bhakti is the life of all other sadhanas as the root cause of all the perfections that an individual may aspire to attain. So karma has been done, and we see that's the big one. That's where everybody gets caught. The jnana means you can be attached to it, but the point is knowing all that and then understanding it's about the person doing that, having that devotion, you go beyond that. Then that comes to the point, you could say that pure bhakti, where then you give up the other aspect that was talking about the attachment to ashram. Then it's just about bhakti. Now you can say, oh, if you give up ashram, that's all the etiquettes and all the other interaction. No, but now you love Krishna. You love the living entities because of their connection to Krishna. Because of that, you're going to be humble. You're going to be tolerant. You're going to respect everyone else. You're not going to look for respect. Where in any circle, anywhere from the top, you know, government, intellectual things right down to the guy on the street, is that not going to be successful? So that's it, is that we have to understand all this varnashram etiquette and activities come out of this verse. That's the source of it. You can, if you want to summarize, you know, Manu and everything, that these four points made in this verse, like that, then you can always chant. Then you can go on to not wanting anything of this world, only be absorbed in the spiritual and surrender to Krishna, as in the fifth, right? So the Shikshastakam, you can say, is the essence of all Shastra, you know, philosophically and religiously. That's why it's by that, then you can see properly the philosophy and properly the religion. Okay, so then he's, you know, brought it up to that point. So now if we've thrown out karma and jnana, that means everything else is also thrown out. But just to make sure, because we may, well, he didn't mention it, you know, like that. Anucheta 97. All the other sadhanas for the Purushartha have their root in bhakti. Devotional quote. Devotional service to his lotus is the root cause of all perfections a person can find in heaven, in liberation, in the subterranean regions, and on earth. Okay, so then, so all other sadhanas, perfections, find in heaven, So that's going to be the Dharma. The liberation is going to be the Mukti. So then the subterranean regions, so either that's the, you know, the Artha, and then the human on earth is the Kama, but we generally see here it's the other way around. Subterranean, just about sense gratification. And there's no Artha to get it, but it's about that. And on earth, then, you know, it's about, you know, getting into our gain and safety here, you know, and you see. That's far out, that's what's going on here. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.81.19. The following principles are stated. Quote, all faults in mantras, rules, and in articles, participants, time, and place are nullified by chanting your glories. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.23.16. That's the one we see Gopalami's given us. From, you know, it's from the Samveda at the end of the activities when you're doing, you know, all this mantras, rituals, you know, we purify all this by taking shelter of Krishna and his holy name. That's it. Yeah, of course, when you, any other time you can remember it, but not. But it's Vamadeva, that verse. You have Vamadeva and then you have, no, it's Chidra Dharma. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Although Shukracharya was a strict Brahmana addicted to ritualistic activities, he also admitted Nischidram Anushankirtanam Tava. Oh, wow, okay. We're quoting this verse and he's saying this is in the Vamadeva and all that, then the Chittadharana, that Vamadeva, by worshiping him or mismantra to him, you get released from all faults. This then is being discussed between Vamanadeva and Shukracharya. So in other words, the discussion on faults and rituals and how to overcome them is a discussion, you know, that Vamanadeva has with Shukracharya, right? Because if he says it, then, you know, we should believe it, but you might think, well, that's that one, whatever. But when Shukracharya means, you know, he's, you know, him and Brihaspati are, you know, prominent Brahmins in the universe, like that. One is the guru for the heavenly planets, he's the guru for the lower planets. Then, you know, quote, my Lord, constant chanting of the holy name of your Lordship makes everything perfect, end quote. In Kali Yuga, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot be performed as perfectly as before, right? So there's always going to be a fault. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami has recommended that although one should take care to follow all the principles in every kind of spiritual activity, right? It means you try to follow the rules as much as is practical that you can do. Especially in the worship of the deity, there's still a chance of discrepancies. And one should compensate for this by chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our Krishna conscious movement, we therefore give special stress to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in all activities. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.23.16, purport. So Prabhupada is pointing out, especially in the deity worship and in everything we do, we're trying to follow the rules and regulations that are given, you know, by the acharyas, you know, what scriptures and the direction the acharyas have given. So, but we know that we do our best still because it's Kali Yuga, there's going to be some discrepancy. We don't have quite the quality of item with some nice oil, but it's not as good as it used to be. I remember when I came to India, the oil, the attars, they were very thick. They were very, they weren't like today that they're just more oily. And the drop of that, one drop on a small piece of cotton wool. And then you know, after offering the deity, then these businessmen, you know, in Calcutta would stick it in their ear, you know, here, because it'll stay. And they didn't have to change. That means they'd take it out before sleeping and taking a bath, but they'd leave it all day. They didn't have to change it for 1 month. It would have smell for 1 month. That's 30 days. Now you get the attars, put it on there, put it in your ear to last 3 days. And that was some time ago, I checked, you know, possibly 20 years ago. Yeah. And so, you know. So it's like you get these, you know, high-end perfumes that cost you, you know, hundreds of bucks. You spray it on, it smells fabulous, but after 5 minutes, some of them, there's no smell. Some of them will last longer, and some of them not, just gone. You know, so that's the thing, is just you're trying to offer the best you can get. It still is not really up to the standard, but still, it's as good as you're trying to do the best in devotion. You get what you can. There'll be discrepancies, even though there's nothing you can do about it. Or it might be you forget to do something, or you didn't put something in this place, or when you put it down, you didn't put it exactly where it should be. You were, you know, somehow distracted or something. So all these little things, but because the devotion is there, and that, and the chanting of the holy name, all the discrepancies are taken care of. That doesn't mean that, oh, we just chant, we don't have to worry about the rules, as some will say. No, you follow the rule as is given. And this is eighth canto purport. So we're already on the directly discussing devotional service. We're not just trying to show how karma and jnana are connected and all that. Now we can just discuss devotional service straight. And he's still making that point, because that's the form. You know, it's not because we chant Hare Krishna, then, you know, you don't have to, you know, interact with somebody properly. You know, oh, we just chant Hare Krishna. You know, no, it has to be done properly. So that's the element. So therefore, if all other things are taken care of, karma and jnana, so then you have little details like all your mantra, tantra, puranadis, like that, it's all taken care of by the holy name. Then the next one, next verse, quote from 11th canto, each of the four social orders headed by the brahmanas was born through different combinations of the modes of nature. From the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord in his universal form, along with the ashramas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.2. So now, you know, 11th canto, now we're dealing with the discussions, these final discussions on technicalities, you know, the Uddhava Gita and all that, where Krishna's talking to Uddhava. Udriki, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. We should have the Chakravarti in here, I think, no? Is that just how they write it? Srila Vishwanath Thakur?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I must.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it happened because all these things, it's over and over again. Yeah. In order to describe the unfortunate condition of those who do not worship the Lord, first the practice of worshiping the Lord is described. The Brahmins arise through sattva. The Kshatriyas arise through sattva and rajas. The Vaishyas arise through rajas and tamas. And the Shudras arise through tamas. Though it says that in this verse that the four ashrams arose in the same way, they do not arise starting from the head. Right? So they all arose from the body of the Lord, but they arise due to these modes. So therefore, goodness, goodness, passion, passion, ignorance. The grihasthas are situated in the hips. The brahmacharis in the heart. The vanaprasthas in the chest. And the sannyasis in the head. So you're seeing it's you're pulling it in a little bit more. The brahmacharis are the heart, because it's the source of all the other ashrams. Everybody starts from brahmachari, and based on that, all the others are there. Now, for the occupational duties and that all this goes on, it's because of the grihasthas. Grihasthas produce brahmacharis. Grihasthas become vanaprastha sannyas, right? And then that brahmachari becomes a grihastha and then vanaprastha. So like that. So where they're placed, the grihasthas are the hips, right? Because from there is then the you're saying is that the hips, that's going to be all the activities that nourish and expand and everything like that, right? The brahmachari is the heart. We explain vanaprastha is in the chest. The chest is there. You know, the arms are there. They protect, they guide, you know, they give that kind of, you know, that connected all together. And then the sannyasis, the head. So like the Brahmins, then they're there. That's why it recommends that Brahmins take sannyas. If they're not Brahmins, they don't. If they're showing by their devotion such strong brahminical place and position because of being such a strong devotee, then it doesn't matter. But otherwise, natural that ethical element is strong there, because it's in other words, the pure devotional element is there, right? Thus, the sequence for the varnas is head, arms, thighs, and feet, whereas for the ashrams, that is hips, heart, chest, and head, right? Goes the other way around, right? In this way, the with the ashramas, Sardarta Darshani, 11.5.2. Hips, heart, chest, and head. Because otherwise you put that the brahmacharis are the feet. But the thing is, no, they're the heart. Because that's the feet. Yeah, they get everything done. But you have to say the heart. Otherwise, then you'll take it that, you know, they're the lowest and so everybody else takes advantage. But no, they're the heart. So there has to be some care. Because the heart, you take care. Like children, you take care. Like that. Okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Hari Bol.